My name is Kim Welch. I'm 75 years old. Today's date is Saturday, March 12th, 2022. We're located in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm interviewing with my daughter, Allison.
And my name is Allison Tannery. I am 51. Today's date is Saturday, March 12th, 2022. We are in Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm here with my dad, Kim Welch. So, you're a career pilot of 52 years, Navy, Delta, and corporate. I was a stay-at-home mom. I'm pretty much still a stay-at-home mom. But 5 years ago, I went back to school to become a nurse to do birth work. And I'm home again now, taking a break to focus on our youngest son is 15, mine and my husband's. Focus on him, my husband, our new home, and some time with you. We come from a family of four. I've got a younger sister. You and mom are still married. 54 years this June. Is that right? Yeah, that's right.
That's it.
So what I'd like to do, why I invited you here, is to talk about your time, some of it in Vietnam, how you got there, and the impact it had in all of our lives. Like many veterans, you haven't talked a lot about it. I'm sure there are a lot of memories you'd rather forget. But there are things I'd love to know more about and share in this new season for all of us, because you've been diagnosed with Parkinson's dementia almost exactly a year ago. What I'd like to start with is May 1970. It's the 8th precisely. I'm sure Mom remembered it was the 8th. And you've often referenced the day, that day, that she told you she was pregnant. What other news came on that very day?
I told her I was leaving for Vietnam right away.
That still kills me. So at the end of that month, just barely 3 weeks later, you began SEER school, which is capital S-E-R-E. But you've told me it means survival, evasion, resistance, and escape. Can you tell me what that meant exactly?
It was training for all Navy pilots who are going to fly in the Southeast Asia area. Although there are a lot of technical details, the main thrust was a pilot having just ejected out of his airplane should not be totally overwhelmed to the state of shock, but have some sense of, I've seen this before, I'm going to be okay.
So the most important part was mental?
Yes, certainly. There were some well-documented cases sometimes of what approached abuse, but they wanted to make it real, and we were glad to have them do that.
So if the cases approached abuse, that meant you had they had physical contact with you.
Yes.
You got beat up.
So. Slapped, open-handed slapped.
Okay. Okay. Then you were supposed to go right overseas, but suddenly you had 10 days. Why did you get 10 days?
It's the clerk who was filling out the paperwork to give me a ticket on an airline to Southeast Asia. Realized he didn't have enough seats, and he caught me going down the door and down the hallway. Lieutenant Welch, we can't get you out of here for 11 days, which was fine with me. It certainly was not a disappointment. But when I had first-hand chance, I had picked up a telephone. It was not cell phones those days, so it was a lot harder to get in, to get in touch with someone. But I called your mother, and where she was in college, finishing her last, having just registered for her last quarter of college at Winthrop College, and told her just in passing, not suggesting that she could do anything about it, but told her just in passing that I was stuck out there for 10 or 11 days, and I was going to be lonely.
So what happened next? Mom was concerned about the tuition.
As soon as she shared the plight with the couple they lived with, the Presbyterian minister and his wife, who were lifelong friends of ours, the wife, Izzy, said, well, we need to get you out there. And your mom's response, but I've already paid my fees. She said, Izzy said, don't you worry about the fees or the school. I'll take care of that. You just get on an airplane for San Diego.
That's awesome. So how did Mom get this information to you?
Well, it was convoluted, to say the least, but in living in Northern California, the Navy base in Northern California, San Francisco area, was a close friend of mine from high school and college days, and Sheila knew that if anybody could get hold of him through the Navy, it would be Matt. And that's what she did. She contacted Matt. Matt got the message sent to me that she would be coming in at 10:30 p.m. on an airliner.
It must have been such a shock.
It was, but I was excited.
I bet.
We had had a very hectic goodbye, the first goodbye, several weeks earlier. So it was nice to have a time to have a more laid-back goodbye.
So you had 10 days in San Diego. What did you do?
We went to Disneyland. What else would you do?
I'm not leaving the hotel room.
I believe you. Do you still have the Pooh Bear that we bought you that day?
I do, and it was in my first baby's crib, too. I have that Pooh Bear. So you have your 10 days together, another goodbye, and you leave the States for some country you'd only seen on a map.
This was a nicer goodbye.
Much, I could tell. Where did Mom stay when you left?
She went home, back to South Carolina, to live with Joe and Izzy and finish up her college degree, which she did later in that summer.
Pregnant with me.
Yes, pregnant with you.
So what I'd like to do is back up just a little bit. Can you tell me how you wound up in Vietnam when you had thought you were going to Jacksonville, Florida?
Well, as I approached the time of my time in flight training, standard deal is to fill out forms, where would you like to go? I had requested and been given an assignment to Jacksonville, Florida, which is very close to our home in Georgia, or South Carolina at that time. And that was the official decision as to what I was going to do. On the other hand, during one of the late sessions of flight training, a representative of the Navy Bureau of Personnel came down to talk to us and said, we're short of pilots on the West Coast, which you can understand why, and we're looking for volunteers to leave the East Coast environment here and go out to California and be stationed with the air stations out there. And he said, if we don't get volunteers, we'll pick some. And so the next day, the list went up, and they had gotten no volunteers, but they picked two, both of very good friends of mine. And all of a sudden, I was overwhelmed with the thought that they were going to get to go off to war, and I wasn't. You know, we all grew up in a generation where we saw John Wayne movies, and my father was a Navy pilot in World War II in the Pacific, and there was a sense of adventure about it, a sense of serving my country, and so I called him up, says, is it too late to change my mind? Nope, not late at all. In fact, we'll let you pick a place, Honolulu or San Francisco, where would you like to be based? And that called your mom, gave her the information, and went on my way.
So you volunteered, and at the time, did she realize that?
No. Sometime later, much later, depending on whether you listen to her or me, the information slipped out that that had been a volunteer, volunteering on my part, and she was quite taken aback, but she handled it.
I'm sure. Your friends, were they Jeff and Jimmy?
Yes. Jim Bringle out of the Naval Academy, Jeff Peer out of the University of Minnesota. We established a strong friendship and flight training, and that continues to this day.
That's amazing. Mom says often that the friends y'all made then are friends you still have now.
Yes. After I walked you down the aisle, after I walked your mom down to her seating and walked back up to pick up you, Jimmy was sitting about halfway on the aisle, halfway up, big grin. Hadn't seen him in 6 years, and that's just the kind of friendship we had.
That's amazing. So you head overseas, and you come home from your first deployment. It's September. Mom is now 7 months pregnant, and you have to go find a home and leave South Carolina.
And she picked me up at the airport, and then we drove out, drove across country.
7 months pregnant.
Yeah, and it took about a week. We got there, moved in with our friends Matt and Carol, who had helped out during the SEER school debacle, and lived with them for, I guess, maybe a month while we house hunted, and then found a home in Milpitas, California, settled in.
Was it near the base?
About 4 miles from the base. That's very handy.
That's great. Couple months more go by, and it's December, and I was born then on the 28th, and you were home for that.
It.
It's almost impossible, right? You were there for that, But by April 1971, you went away for another 6 months overseas. You've told me before how dramatically different it was leaving then the second time compared to the first time. You said there was no more John Wayne syndrome. Can you explain that to me?
It was awful. I exhibited fear and apprehension that I had none of going the first time, but of course I had no fear because I didn't know what it was like. Being in Vietnam the second time and having been through it once, it was a full appreciation of what could be the end result of that time, and I was overwhelmed with thoughts of not about myself, but what if I had to leave my family behind? And that was a very difficult issue to deal with. So there was no sense of celebration that we're going out on another deployment. It was just resignation.
In fact, you wrote a letter to me before you went.
That was a common thing in the squadron that I joined, that, to write a letter to a surviving child, in case there was one, put it in with the records, and it would always be in my records. At some point, if something would happen to me somewhere down the line, someone would have that in my records and see it's addressed to you.
I was supposed to get it when I graduated high school, and so you just handed it to me, said, look, I've had this all this time, you do what you want. And 10 years ago or so, I tried to open it up and read it, and I got one sentence in and closed it. I cannot read this.
It was a tender time.
And it's tender to still read, and I will just keep it. So Mom said while you were gone that she kept your picture on the fridge, and every day she'd carry me over to the fridge, point you out, and say, Dada, Dada, Dada. And I learned it, and 30 other or so words she wants me to brag on myself. By the time you were back in October of 1971, I was 10 months old. How did I respond to you? Mom said it didn't take long.
Not at all. Just a little bit of shy grins from around the corner and a couple of quick hugs, and she was happy with me.
That's great. Me, I was happy with you. Yeah.
I
know. I knew what you meant. Mom also tells this funny story that I still woke at night sometimes to call out for her, but the very first night you were home, I did so. And in calling out, I called out, Dada, Dada, because that is what she had taught me. And you jumped out of the bed.
In a flash.
And
you were calling me.
And so you thought I'd put it together that quickly. And then what did you find out?
I found out that you called everything Dada, everybody Dada, Dada.
So she got to stay in the bed. Did you still get up later after that?
Oh, yeah. I was happy to do that. Already the next deployment's looming on the horizon. And so you think about things you don't want left undone.
Of course. So you did go back for a third tour. It was a final time. I was 16 months old, I think Mom said. And you got back when I was almost two. Mom says it was different that time, getting to know you.
It was harder. Much more standoffish and unsure of who was this man in your house. So it took it a couple of days.
You probably understood the reasoning behind it.
Oh, of course.
Did that lesson, how it made you feel?
That didn't make it hurt any less.
I'm sure. So you had given serious thought, you and Mom, to the Navy being your career. What changed your mind?
Well, I love the Navy, and I love flying in the Navy, but this was a slap in the face to think that, you know, that our family could be broken up at some point to where you didn't know who I was. How many times would I have to face that in the future with you and other children? Subsequent children would have to get to know me again, and we decided that's not the way we wanted to spend our lives.
So what did you do about it?
Well, it was a hard thing to do, believe it or not. First, we got a babysitter. We went to a fast food restaurant in Milpitas and wanted to talk about it. My position was I love the Navy, and I love what we're doing. Your mom's position was, I'll do whatever you want to do. So the upshot was I wrote a letter resigning my commission and leaving the Navy officially.
So it was a conscious decision.
It was.
For both of you, particularly you, to leave the Navy, to actively engage in your wife and children. Mom had been using all of her power and prayer to help us bond during the times that you were having to be away. And she said it worked. Once you were home, we were fairly inseparable when you were there. I know the story that I would wake up as a almost 2-year-old and run to the closet where you kept your flight jacket. And if it was there, I knew you were home. And I would pound on the garage door because you always had a car you were working on out there. And how helpful would it be for me to be out there? But you let me go out. And if your flight jacket was gone, I just put it around and occupied myself. Is that what Mom said? Okay. Then, in 1977, you took a job with Delta, which also created time for you to be home. More than any sort of other job probably would have at that time. It wasn't 9-to-5 office.
I was able to use the scheduling system to have the maximum amount of time at home.
You were able to be home quite a bit. And as an aside to that jacket, I begged you, if you remember, to let me wear it in high school because Tom Cruise's Top Gun was the thing. And you finally relented, and I thought I was such big stuff. I think I wore an outfit to match it, like from the movie. But you told me I couldn't take it off the whole time I was at school in case it got taken or lost.
That's true.
So I think these choices have been able to give us kind of an unusual relationship in many ways. I don't know a lot of women, when I talk to them, who understand that I liked to go through outfit choices with you and usually take your side. And I know that can be considered a little codependent maybe, but there was a time it was very comfortable and it worked well, and so well that we even, Mom and I, had you come, was up in Roswell where that wedding dress place was, and you helped us decide between two wedding dresses. And actually the story is, you said I could have either one. One was very expensive and one not. You said they were both equally amazing or beautiful, and I picked the less expensive one. I just wanted to make sure you remembered that part.
I appreciated that very much.
What was really interesting for me was understanding you weren't an outsider. You weren't an other than. We didn't have girl talk. We had family talk. You knew as much about female puberty, periods, sanitary supplies, as any mom did. And I know that was unusual in the 80s. I don't think you had many peers run into the store and calling back, do you want them with wings? Do you want them extra absorbent? Mm-hmm. Other things that I can recall that seem to represent my feeling close to you are remembering to be getting almost too big to be carried in from the car when we would fall asleep as children. So a few times I just kept my eyes closed. So you'd have to kind of grunt and huff into the kitchen and get me down to the bedroom. And I knew I was getting heavy, but that's just what you had to endure. I wouldn't even leave you alone when you needed it. There was that drive when we were moving from Florida to Georgia.
15 hours. You never stopped talking all the way.
So we had a moment where we stopped for gas, and it was supposed to be Mom's turn.
I was worried that you would be lonely in the truck by yourself.
That's what I said.
So your mom agreed to let you ride with me the rest of the way.
That was a sacrifice for her. Yeah, I'm sure your ears were bleeding, but you let me get back in the truck.
You never ran out of things to talk about.
How charming. I also remember thinking nobody knew anything more than you knew it. You were the final authority. There was that old Sunday school teacher, Christy's grandmother, who explained a Bible story to us, and I told her, I think I was 8 years old, raised my hand and said, well, this is what my dad says about that interpretation. So she said, well, not everybody knows everything. And I was incensed and told Mom I was not going back to Sunday school. This revered woman had already turned me off from church by 9 years old. Let's see. We are moving on to a couple other moments when I was older. Remember at the beach, I slipped on that concrete.
Yeah, broke your chin.
Wide open.
Mm-hmm.
And what did I make you do?
Hold your hand while they sewed you up.
And then 2 years later, I'm planning a wedding. with Blake, and I have to get a filling. I'm 21 years old, and what did I make you do?
Hold your hand while the dentist fills you do.
I was always a chicken at the dentist. I think that made me feel that I could ask for help and comfort as I was growing up, but that you were also teaching me to be very tough and independent. I had that streak, too, I'm sure. It was an effort of both you and Mom, but I felt like you were the one that kind of trained me in it. You would debate and spar with me some, and Mom just didn't want to have anything to do with that. So you helped me cut my teeth on learning to think critically. But I also could just say, come hold my hand. When all my kids were born, it wouldn't have been nearly as special if you weren't there, because it was so much more fun to see you and Mom together, enjoying a moment, sharing a moment, whether it was elated or sad, because I knew you had each other's backs and y'all were rock solid. There was nothing I could do or act out to do to change that, even when I was such a jerk in high school. So being a career pilot for Delta gave you almost unheard of time at home. I think it really also cemented what you and Mom had wanted to create when you left the Navy, that closeness as a family unit. Do you think that was critical?
Oh, absolutely.
I think, as silly as it sounds, you know, if you looked up Daddy's Girl in the dictionary, there'd be a picture of me. I just remember feeling it was us against the world. I was in high school. Sometimes you would say goodnight, and as you were closing my door, you would just tell me how special I was, which might sound a little inflated to someone, but it really gave me a sense of confidence. And I think the world is mean enough. I think you bolster your kids the best you can because they're going to get knocked down later. I think it helped. And I thought Mom was an idiot for putting up with us. Why would anybody schlep a taxi driver, a maid, a cook, a counselor, a nurse, a personal shopper, a party thrower, a use-my-barn-er, and put up with what I gave during those teenage years? And during that time, I had more pride in identifying with you and those parts of you that were in me. But after I had these four kids, Mom is now a certified superhero. And helped to show me during those years what it took to be a good mom and to be available and to love and not jump off the roof.
She's the best.
She is. So I've heard you talk about how the service in Vietnam directly changed the way you look at time away from each other. Can you explain that to me?
Sure. When we came home from the first deployment, it seemed like we were sitting around a lot of time on our hands, and some of my fellow pilots started a golf group. And I tried one half of one round of golf and realized I had no reason to want to be away from my home and my family voluntarily. I'm gone enough when it's not voluntary. So things like golfing or tennis tournaments, your mom's, she avoided things like ladies' Bible group and women's retreat for this, that, and the other. We didn't do any of those things, those retreat things, and get away. And I'm not saying they're wrong or there's a fault to them, but it wasn't what we chose. We chose maximum exposure for our family.
And like you said, you had been forced apart at one point. I think that's an unusual choice also. I don't think I saw many of your friends making that choice. So Mom has always said it never felt sacrificial, that she feels like choosing you and us was the best choice she can make. And that's almost 54 years now. I really appreciate that we could do this today. There was just, to have this opportunity is really special for me. And I was wondering if you had any particular thoughts on, as we kind of wrap this up, that you would feel comfortable sharing something to. You said something about him.
Sure.
Yeah.
Anybody approaching my age and older, people are familiar with the great Calliope merry-go-rounds that were attached to the late part of the 19th century that were part of the big state fairs and trade fairs and that sort of thing. And the part along with that ride on those horses going up and down, around, there were token gifts, token prizes you could grab if you were good on your back of your horse. But the ultimate prize, the best prize, was a gold ring. And I've always, ever since I've understood what that was, I've expressed to people when the conversation comes up, is that I grabbed the golden ring in life.
Yeah. Well, if I can talk in just a minute, I will end with this, but I have to gather myself. Okay. There isn't a part of my life that I can think of where I thought, well, I'm over being Dad's girl. You can imagine Blake and I've even had to talk about that some. Is you didn't fall away from competing with my husband for quite a forever. So, and I know you know I don't really mean competition. Of course he's my husband and he's my official number one. But I think somewhere I need another moment. Somewhere along the way, I decided I would have two number ones and maybe a one and a second one, but no less love or loyalty. You've taught me to go after what I want, and that's what I wanted. I love you.
I love you too, hon. Sure. Greatest moment of my life. And I was a senior in high school, and she was a junior. I didn't know her well, but we had an event coming up. A homecoming game was coming up, homecoming dance. And I didn't have a date because of my erstwhile girlfriend had for several years had gone by the wayside. And I just wanted a date to go to homecoming for my senior year and ask a person who was a friend of Sheila's, a friend of your mom's. And they said, no, I've got a date, but Sheila doesn't. And I had to find out which Sheila they were talking about. And it was Sheila O'Shields. Mm-hmm. And so we arranged to ask her for a date. She accepted. We had our first date on October 4th, 1964. Mm-hmm. 1963. And that night I told her that she was going to be my wife. I had no doubts about it whatsoever. My dad had the same thing. He told my mother that on the first date, he knew she was the one, and I felt the same way about your mom. And she has been the love of my life.
Do you know that Blake's father, Roger, told Judy that on their first date? And Blake told me that.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really unusual. Yeah.
Do you remember anything about the wedding day? What she looked like?
Sheila? Mom? Yeah, he's talking to you.
I didn't hear the question. I'm sorry.
What do you remember about the wedding day?
How beautiful your mom looked. Radiant smile. And going back to the back of the church to fetch you and telling you it wasn't too late.
That for my wedding.
If you wanted.
No, you did. You answered that, and then you remembered that moment with me. So at my wedding, with all the preparation of a sophisticated Southern lady that went into the preparation of this very nice wedding at the back of the church. And I don't think you had doubt, but you wanted me to know specifically. Yeah. And tell me again what you said.
It's not too late. If you're not sure, we can just turn around right here and walk out.
I think you also said, we'll all just go have a party.
That sounds right.
Did you think for a second that I would?
No.
Step back.
Well, that was a really, I had no doubts about your relationship with Blake.
Well, that was a really generous thing to say. I remembered that. I will remember that.
And Kim, do you have any particular favorite memories of Allison growing up? I heard a lot about her favorite memories of you.
I do. She was always a source of pride for me. She also was very intuitive and instructive to me as to what kind of man I wanted to be. And my life will forever be changed. You may remember this. We came into the house one night, and we'd been out, the four of us, with the family, and I was very angry because you couldn't get the right groceries. Get them in the car and get them home. I'm not sure why that touched me also, but it did. And I raised my voice to you and expressed my displeasure. We got home. Everybody went to bed. You went to bed. And it just drove me crazy to think what I'd done. I knew there was only one thing I could do to undo that. I went in and woke you up and said, I'm sorry.
That was a very valuable lesson for me. That's, I think, one of the only reasons I still talk to my kids and they talk to me and that I'm still married is because you modeled that love is asking for forgiveness and admitting when you're wrong and saying sorry. I do remember being awakened. I just didn't remember why until you told me again. Any other memory?
I'm sure I'll think of 500 when we walk out to the parking lot.
How about the funniest one?
Between the two of us, the funniest occasion? Well, she stood up there on the altar waiting to say her vows with Blake.
Right.
And the minister read through, you do this, you do this. And then he looked at Allison and said, do you? And she didn't move. She didn't make a sound.
Because he said,
We started then again. He read part of it again and then said, Allison, do you? No sound comes out of you. And then somebody in the audience, I guess, said, Joe, it's Allison. He was asking Alice. Or
Kim, he said
He was using my name. That's
yes.
Right.
And what was funny about that is that minister, Joe and Izzy, those friends that Mom lived with and influenced y'all so much, had married you and Mom. So it was like a little flashback. I was standing there, and he used your name in my vows. And so I didn't know how to correct him. Not coincidentally, but as an aside to that, he had also christened me, whatever the dedication ceremony can be called in a Christian church, and my first two children. So he was a really big part of our life. He just didn't remember my name. He loved me. He just didn't know my name.
And we had a good time with that.
Yeah, it was really good.
All right. If you all are ready, then I'll turn the machines off.
Okay. It's good.